From the National Catholic Register, this is Register Radio, bringing light and clarity to the news and topics that affect your life.
President Donald Trump delivered a historic State of the Union address earlier this week, touting his administration's accomplishments and plans for the country. How did Trump's very lengthy speech land with the pro-life coalition helped to elect him to a second term? This week on Register Radio, we talked to Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. And then the country is still buzzing over the gold medal victories of the United States women's and men's hockey team at the Milan Cortina Winter Games. We talked to Register staff writer Gigi Duncan about a Catholic high school attended by five of the women gold medalists and three other Olympians. Hello, I'm Shannon Mullen, editor-in-chief of the National Catholic Register. My co-host Matthew Bunsen could not join us this week. Well, on Tuesday, President Trump delivered the longest State of the Union address in recorded history, a nearly 1 hour, 50-minute speech that detailed his administration's efforts to reduce the cost of living, revive the U.S. economy, bring peace to Gaza, Ukraine, and other war zones around the world, among other topics. He also celebrated the victory of the U.S. men's and women's hockey teams and honored the heroism of current and former service members. One topic he did not address, however, was abortion, and specifically the controversy surrounding the proliferation of the chemical abortion pill mifepristone. That drug, which can be prescribed without an in-person doctor's visit, is driving a sharp increase in the number of abortions nationwide, even in states where the practice is sharply restricted. Joining us is Marjorie Dannenfelser, one of the country's most prominent pro-life leaders. Marjorie, welcome.
It's great to be with you, Shannon. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, Marjorie, you wrote a commentary for the Register, kind of giving your hot take on President Trump's address. Thank you for that. I know you were disappointed he did not address the abortion pill issue. My question is, were you surprised?
Well, let me just put it this way. I believe that a lack of hope is an offense to the Holy Spirit, so I am always hopeful. However, the track record this time around in Trump's administration has been to do nothing on this issue. And so maybe not 100% surprised, but definitely the only thing that really matters is that if he did one thing, told the FDA today to reinstate the rules surrounding the distribution of this drug, the same rules that were present in his first administration, it was only changed by Biden during COVID. If he restored those rules, hundreds of thousands of children's lives would be saved, and there would be less coercion. There would be less forced abortion, might even go down to zero, to be honest, among women who intend to have their children. They have an ex or a pimp or someone who doesn't want them to have that child, and they force their will on the woman and make sure that there is the abortion, and imagine how you'd feel in that situation. So it's easily fixed, hasn't been done. It was, yes, a beautiful, vaunted speech. There is a great case that could have been made, and that's one of the perfect places to make a case for legislation that you plan or regulation that you plan to introduce. I think he probably has no intention. We have to keep the pressure up.
Yeah, so as you mentioned, the FDA has basically been on record saying that they're going to do a review. So even just referencing that's still the plan, that even asking people to be pro-life Americans to be patient with that process. Mm-hmm. Why do you think he didn't go there at all?
Well, there are two reasons. One is there really is no process. The senators and the members of Congress on the House side, Senate side, the leaders who've been pressing for action on this have come to the conclusion, as have we, that there really is no action going on. There's a lot of milling around, no actual action. Also, you do not need a study to read the horrors that are happening from states all over the country with this drug. And there is a absolute power, an ability to stop, to, you know, reinstate those regulations now. But the other, and I think overarching issue, is the A word. The fear of talking about the A word right before midterms. I think it's pretty clear that that's really the driving concern, not a scientific concern, not a concern for unborn children, not a concern for women, a concern for hiding from the issue, not speaking of it, hoping for the best. And that actually is political, not only morally wrong, but it's political malpractice to take that stance in the face of this horror.
Yeah, the Pro-Life Coalition was, it played a huge role in electing Trump to a second term. But the abortion pill in particular, that's the main focus, I think, of the pro-life movement right now. Why is the abortion pill itself such a game changer?
Well, I just want to amplify what you said in the beginning there. Our people on the ground and all of our communications in presidential battleground states were pivotal. We know this. We know the data. We've been in those battlegrounds every election since 2014. We know it works. We know that the pro-life people on the ground make an enormous difference. This isn't a guess. We have the numbers. We're in the middle of the door-to-door for the midterms right now. We went to over 10.5 million people with this argument in battleground states that it was a better choice to have Trump over Biden. And so why is the pill a game changer? It's because it is the reason that the abortion rate has escalated since the Dobbs decision. I don't know if anyone would have predicted that overturning Roe v. Wade a few years later, we would see a spike in the number of abortions in the country. And the one reason is the abortion drug, which now accounts for almost 70% of abortions in this country, including the most pro-life states that have strong pro-life protections. That's why it is huge. And to ignore it is to ignore a horror that's occurring. And it's also a political miscalculation.
Yeah, let's talk about the politics side of things. Is, you know, there's polling out there that you've cited that Americans overwhelmingly don't support such easy access to this drug. Is that true?
That's true. And among Republican voters, 7 in 10 believe that that there should be an in-person doctor visit. And why? I mean, just common sense, if you didn't need an explanation. But if you need an explanation, you need to know what gestational point your unborn child is. If it's over 10 weeks, it's dangerous. Of course, it's always dangerous to the child. If you have an ectopic pregnancy, you need to know. It could be a matter of life or death. If you are, if it's your first pregnancy, you could have RH factor, which could be deadly for your second pregnancy, so for your second pregnancy and the child there. So you need to have the consultation of a doctor. It just, you know, you have it to get allergy medicine. Why not something that is so life-changing and also leads to documented dangers and harms for women, sepsis, hemorrhaging, shock. It is noted to be by Ethics and Public Policy Center and Restoration PAC of America. Lots of studies that have shown that 1 in 11 women end up with one of these horrible adverse effects. It's really no reason other than fear, which is generally what you don't find in this president, to keep us from getting to a new place right now. Our goal is to make sure that that we're communicating as forcefully as we possibly can. We're in the middle of midterms now. We'll spend $80 million trying to make sure we restore a Senate and a House that are strongly pro-life. But we need to be thinking also about 2028 and what presidential candidate deserves our support.
Let me ask you about the statistics. So they're not good. The numbers of abortions are climbing, I think, in the order of maybe 200,000 more per year. That's a huge increase. But how reliable are the numbers? I mean, with chemical abortions, it's a different situation when it's a non-surgical abortion. So I'm just kind of curious, how reliable are the numbers? Could they be more? Could they be less? Do you have any idea how they're calculated now?
Well, it's You're exactly right. It's the Wild West of pharmaceuticals when it comes to these abortion drugs. They're being mailed in from New York and California to all the pro-life states. They're being mailed from other countries into anywhere. You just go online and you can get them. You could be anybody. You could be a pimp. You could be the woman. You could be a fraternity president. You could be anybody that just wants to stockpile these pills. And so you really don't know how many of them have been used, how many of them have not. There are case after case where, women just are saying, look, these pills are walking into pregnancy centers. The particular case I heard the other day, a young woman walks in and you're like, I got all these pills. I don't really want to use one of them. What should I do? So that just shows there's very, very difficult when it's a lawless situation to, unless they die, it doesn't have to be reported. Mm-hmm. That is the deal with a pill, with the abortion drug. So what we think it is, it's at a minimum 1.1 million, which is a 30% increase since around the time of the Dobbs decision. But we really don't know. That's just a floor. It's probably far more, but there is no required reporting. And what this all adds up to is a general lack of concern or care, a just shrugging off of what is happening to children in this country, and a shrugging off of the harms to women. It is an abomination. And I'll just tell you, there's a case that came out just 2 days ago, came to light in Montgomery County, Houston, in Texas. A woman who wanted her baby, named her Presley May. The father of the baby didn't want the baby, couldn't convince her to abort the baby, so slipped the drug into her drink, killed Presley May. Presley May was stillborn, so far along. Not that it is dispositive, that it's more, she's more valuable than she was a little while ago, but just imagine how horrific that was. The mother, of course, had no idea. The man, of course, knew everything. So this is the situation that is being allowed to go every day by this FDA in this administration. And it's there is nothing more important in the pro-life movement than to address this and insist to our elected officials that something be done.
Marjorie, as the midterms approach closer, we hope to talk to you again. Thank you for your piece in the Register, and we'll be watching this issue closely in the months ahead. Thanks so much.
It's a delight to be with you. I look forward to next time.
You're listening to Register Radio on EWTN Radio. Next, we talk with Register staff writer Gigi Duncan about a Catholic high school that is a hockey powerhouse. Stay tuned to Register Radio here on EWTN Radio.
Let's return to Register Radio on EWTN.
Welcome back. I'm Shannon Mullen. Joining us now is Register staff writer Gigi Duncan. Who's written a number of wonderful pieces on the just completed Winter Games. Gigi, welcome.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, more than 20 million people got up early to watch the men's gold medal hockey game between the United States and Canada last week. Were you among them, Gigi?
Yes, I was among them. I set my alarm for 8 o'clock that morning.
All right, yeah. It was it was really must-watch TV. It was just so exciting, as was the women's gold medal game, also against Canada. Just this, riveting overtime game. It's amazing, amazing goal that decided things. So I know you've been watching the Olympics carefully, looking for those Catholic angles that the Register can highlight. Tell us about Bishop Kearney High School.
Yeah, so Bishop Kearney High School, it's a small Catholic school for grades 6 through 12. It was originally founded in 1962 by the Congregation of Christian Brothers and the School Sisters of Notre Dame. It was originally, boys and girls separated, now it is co-ed. It is in Irondequoit. It's a small suburb of Rochester in upstate New York, kind of on the southern shore near Lake Ontario. But yeah, it's this small Catholic school within the upstate New York community that has long had a great reputation for forming the whole person spiritually, academically, athletically. But in the mid-2010s, it was facing a problem very common for a lot of Catholic schools across the nation with declining enrollment and financial struggles. So school staff kind of looked to a nearby boys' high school that had been going through similar problems, but was starting to kind of gain traction with an elite boys' hockey program. So the staff at that school started to wonder if maybe a girls' elite hockey program would kind of bear similar fruits for their school, for tuition, for enrollment, and just for kind of putting Bishop Kearney across the map. So with the help of kind of local hockey professionals and school staff and alumni in 2016, they built dorms on the campus and they created this BK Selects women's hockey program. So it hasn't been around too long, less than 10 years technically, and a boys program would soon follow in 2020. But yeah, the hockey program has really put the school on the map, and it's just really remarkable that in less than a decade, they've had 5 players for Team USA come out of the high school, in addition to an assistant coach for Team USA and 2 players on Team Germany and Team Czechia. So it's really remarkable how quickly it's grown, and yeah, how great, you know, it is to have this small Catholic school in New York, which, you know, is somewhat known for hockey, maybe not as much as a Minnesota or Massachusetts, but yeah, to have them represent Team USA, it just sounded to be like such a blessing for the school and the community, and they're really excited about what else is coming next for the program.
Yeah, the business side of this story is fascinating to me. You know, so many schools, as you mentioned, you know, really struggle financially, and to find that sort of competitive edge that will attract families. And so it's so interesting that they found it in hockey, and I imagine that's really helped their bottom line quite a bit.
Yeah, you know, just with, you know, tuition of the students, it includes both students within the country and also a lot of international students that come to play hockey, both the girls and boys teams, just their program. They live in dormitories that were added onto the school campus. So, you know, with that tuition and enrollment and just, again, the national attention that the Olympics have brought the school, yeah, it's really kind of helped them to spread their message, to, you know, to share the importance of having a good Catholic education and being able to do that while competing at, you know, the elite level of sports.
Yeah, so let me ask you just about the structure of it. So the hockey players at the school, I mean, are they going to regular classes? Are they really a part of the regular student body? Or is this kind of a separate situation for them?
Yeah, so they're really fully integrated with the school and community life. You know, for the women's, there's a 19U and a 16U, so players under the age of 19 and 16. The men's, there's 4 teams, actually, so a bit bigger than the women's program. But, you know, they live on campus and they're fully immersed in student life. The director of hockey I spoke with mentioned that, you know, even the Olympic alumni, they were on the National Honor Society. They were attending the school's monthly mass and retreats. They were, you know, really involved within the school community. And it was a good opportunity for them to kind of be able to learn to balance both, you know, normal life, extracurriculars, but also competing at a very elite level of hockey. A lot of these women go on to play at the top universities, on national teams, and as we saw, the Olympic team. So yeah, it was really stressed that kind of highlighting that balance between both the sport and academics, normal school life, really helped these girls to flourish.
Yeah, they couldn't ask for a better marketing plan than right. than the gold medal. So what can you tell us about these 5 graduates who were on the Olympic team?
Yeah, so actually 4 of them are currently on the University of Wisconsin's hockey team. That won the national championship in the NCAA just this past year. Yeah, and one of them, Layla Edwards, she's made a lot of noise over the media because she's actually the first African-American athlete to compete for the women's hockey team for Team USA. So even that within itself is such a big feat. But yeah, these women, they're all very elite players. The fifth one, Haley Wynn, I actually spoke with her parents. She is a professional hockey player with the Boston Fleet. The Professional Women's Hockey League was just created a couple years ago, but she especially, it sounds like she really savored her time at Bishop Kearney. One tradition that they said from the get-go, the very first game was that the players would pray in the locker room before each game. And that was something she kind of continued to do at Clarkson University, where she played for 4 years, where she led a Bible study. And then even in the Olympics, it was something her and several of her teammates kind of continued to pray before each game. So yeah, these women, they seem, you know, they're the top women's hockey athletes, but, you know, they all sound very appreciative of Bishop Kearney and all that they kind of gathered from their time at the school, their experience. And yeah, Haley Wynn's parents especially said that, you know, there were many hockey programs all over the country, but it was Bishop Kearney's emphasis on forming the whole person that really stood out for them.
Yeah. Gigi, you've been doing a number of really wonderful stories for us. Let's change gears briefly here. One of your pieces that ran this week, how a new wedding platform is reimagining the Catholic journey to the altar. Explain a little bit about what a wedding platform is and what's distinctive about this one.
Yeah, so a wedding platform, it's kind of a way for couples to share details about their big day with family and friends. It includes, you know, a wedding party list, details on when and where the reception and the ceremony is, the mass, other details too, just RSVP, maps, you know, things to do. But sometimes more mainstream sites, as people have found, promote values that might not be in total alignment with church teaching, especially around June. There's all this content around Pride Month and, you know, articles coming from maybe The Knot or Zola about these different things. So what sets Cana apart is that it's founded for Catholic and Christian couples. So they don't have to worry about, you know, planning a wedding, whereas, you know, with other sites, it might compromise their values. So it's kind of the typical rundown of the wedding website, you know, still the details, you know, photos, all of that, but they can incorporate Catholic art into their website. There's a specific tab for prayer requests where they invite, you know, their guests to kind of pray for their own prayer intentions as they prepare for the sacrament. And all the couples I spoke with said that this has made all the difference in their wedding preparation, especially in encouraging family and friends who might not be Catholic or who might not be practicing the faith to kind of share in the prayer and the preparation of the sacrament alongside with them.
Yeah, I know the wedding registry is part of the website, right? How does that work?
Yeah, so what's really nice about Cana is that it comes at no cost to couples. The way that the small team founded it was that the way they generate revenue is taking a 4% commission from partner retailers. So any retailers included on the registry can include Amazon, you know, Crate and Barrel, a lot of the usual retailers involved with the wedding industry. And yeah, the founder specifically mentioned that this was meant to kind of alleviate the stress of these brides. You know, obviously weddings come with a lot of planning and costs. Other wedding website platforms might appear as free, but then they may have high, you know, customization fees, hidden costs, all of that. So yeah, it really comes as a way to help both the bride and, you know, her fiance really focus on preparing for the sacrament. And the founders really emphasize that this is the whole point. You know, the wedding isn't just a big one-day event. It's preparing for the sacrament of marriage and kind of entering into that union with God at the forefront.
Yeah. You know, there's a crisis in marriage, right? Fewer and fewer young couples are getting married these days. This is a huge issue for the Catholic Church. This is how the faith is propagated, is through families and families committing to parish life and things like that. So I know you're working on a number of pieces sort of wedding related. You know, we're kind of doing our part to promote Catholic marriage. And this is another example. It's a great, really a kind of an apostolate. It's a business, of course, but it's great to see these types of initiatives really affirming people in their faith.
Yeah, and Cain has really grown. It only was launched back in September of 2025, and within the first month, they had 1,000 couples without any paid advertising. Now they're up to around 2,000. And when I asked the founders why that was, they felt that it was growing so quickly. It was just because they said, yeah, young couples today, you know, we live in a society, like you said, where people don't always understand the meaning of marriage or family, and they're kind of struggling with that. But a lot of young people are kind of turning back to tradition, and they're seeking the good and the true and the beautiful. And Cain is just another platform for them to, you know, further explore that in their faith and to kind of live, yeah, preparing for the sacrament of marriage and really understanding and entering into what that is.
Great. Thanks, Gigi. We'll talk to you again soon. Well, that's it for Register Radio this week. Remember, for more news, analysis, and commentary, check out the National Catholic Register online at ncregister.com. Thanks for joining us on Register Radio here on EWTN. Until next week, on behalf of our producer, Michael McCall, I'm Shannon Mullen. Please take care and God bless.